You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
To the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Tonight, we are talking about the latest news for Kansas, both football and basketball. Well, the football one is really more of an administration type thing, but there actually has been some news here, even though there are no sports going on. And to help me talk about that, I have my usual cohort here during basketball season or the wrap-up to basketball season, Steve Fetch. Fetch, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
Well, I've been better. For those of you guys that have been paying attention on Twitter, the Rock Chalk Sports Talk, that is the Lawrence radio station. You know, it's a KLWN in Lawrence. I believe it's 1320 AM. You know, they have been doing this trivia tournament, which it just kicked off starting this week. Both Fetch and I are actually in the tournament. I went today, today being Thursday. Fortunately, I flamed out horribly. I was afraid this was going to happen. And when the question comes up, Fetch, I don't know if you've actually heard it yet. Did you actually hear me on the radio today?
I did listen, and I got your text about choking and blowing it or whatever you said right before they aired the question. So they must have not aired it exactly live. So I knew it was coming. Yeah, I figured you were going to answer like Devontae Graham or something like that.
I messed up because I always do that every single year. I always flip-flop back and forth, and I overcorrected a little too much. Because when I think of the 2020, I normally think of the way that we do in football. Or this year, a lot of times I have to talk myself into, oh, wait, it's 2020, not 2019. And so I was sitting there thinking, I was like, okay, wait a minute, which one was that? Okay, so if it's that one, like I need to move it back a year to what I normally think. And I went the wrong way. I meant to go the other way from what I did. And so I'm sitting there trying to think of like, well, who would be the guy? Like, okay, well, it was Frank Mason the 1 year, and then it was Devontae Graham the next year. And it's like, it probably wasn't one of those two, but my mind kind of froze as to who, like who'd actually name. And so I went with Mason, obviously, which was a horrible mistake on my part. If I had thought about it, like the other guy I was thinking about would be like Svi, but, I thought it was going to be someone you wouldn't have normally thought of. And Malik Newman, obviously he had an absolutely phenomenal Big 12 tournament and then NCAA tournament. That should have been the one that kind of just clicked for me, but you know, the clock is real. Like it really does psych you out. If I had a little bit more time to think about it, I probably could have gotten it if I had talked myself through it. But you really don't have time to talk through it when they're sitting there waiting. You know, you have a 10-second clock to be able to answer any of those. So it was a big flame out. I was surprised to have gotten a 3 seed to begin with. And, of course, I think they just randomly assigned them or did something in terms of how quickly you got it in. I'm not really sure how they did that. It seemed somewhat random because I know you got in the same time frame that I did in terms of the early ones. So they didn't just, like, give it to, you know, like the overall number one was just whoever answered first or anything like that. So. I was a little bit surprised, but what about you? Like, are you looking forward? Because when this episode comes out, it'll be Friday morning. You actually are going on that afternoon for your first round matchup. How are you feeling about that one?
Well, so first off, I mean, I've only talked about the Malik Newman OT performance against Duke a million times, either on here or on the site, but. Now that I know that, you know, you had your ears screwed up, that makes a little bit more sense. The clock stuff, I think is probably going to be pretty real tomorrow. I am, you know, whatever, somewhat used to performance under pressure in the face of questioning just due to my, like, real life job. So maybe that'll help me a little bit. But Having 10 seconds to answer a question, especially if you get one of those questions where you think you know the answer, but kind of second guess yourself or whatever. I know in one of the other games that I don't remember if it was yours or if it was the other one today, the question was just like, name any player who transferred in the KU or KU or whatever.
Yeah, that was the guy who got it and knocked me out, because that was his question right after I missed that.
Okay. And that's one where it's like,
that's a really easy one
right now. Yeah, but I mean, you know, for me, that's one where, like, right now I could probably list you 30 of them, but if you get me in that time pressure, it's okay, you know, did this guy transfer? I don't exactly remember, and which one of these guys do I name and all this stuff, and you just kind of freeze up and choke and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think the time thing is definitely something that I'm afraid of, and also, you know, I guess I'm not going to, just in case, you know, whoever, I don't know if Nick Short picks which questions he's going to ask when or whatever, but just in case he listens, I don't want to give any hints as far as topics or categories that I'm more comfortable with than not, but I'm definitely afraid of getting a level one question, but just in an area that I have no knowledge base for or something like that, and missing. I mean, that's my big worry right now, for sure.
Well, and that's what I was up against today. Like, it took him forever, the guy that I played against, it took him forever to answer that first question. And I thought he was going to miss it. I was like, wait a minute, what? Like, that would have been a rather interesting. And I don't even remember what the question was now, but it was one of those, like, I could answer it immediately after they asked it to him. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they get for you. Obviously I'll be rooting for you when you come in tomorrow, you know, and listening to that, because I do recognize a few of the other names that are on there. So I will have some rooting interest going into this tournament, but it was definitely a fun experience. Obviously, I wish I would have stuck around a lot longer than I did. And yes, everybody feel free to laugh and ridicule, you know. But I will say, you know, next time you guys, if you're gonna laugh at me for messing it up so early, you better be trying to sign up for it next time, you know, because they had a really hard time filling this out. And I think it's because a lot of people were kind of afraid to do something similar to what I did, where they make a fool of themselves getting out on what should have been an easy question when they just choke under the pressure of the time clock. So. All right, that's enough about that.
It's gonna, okay, fair enough.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Well, final thought.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of it's going to come down to, you know, which questions in terms of, you know, just lining up with your knowledge base more so than anything else. Because I've listened to, well, I didn't listen to the first day, but I've listened to the rest of them. And there have been a lot of times where it's, you know, they've gotten pretty deep and I've known all of them just within half a second. But then there have been a couple of rounds where, you know, it's been round two, and they've asked, you know, a question that I just have no idea, and other people have, you know, either gotten it right away or also not known it. But it just kind of doesn't seem like there's a ton of rhyme or reason in terms of how difficult the questions are based on round, other than that first round. So I think it's going to be, you know, a lot of luck of the draw type stuff. So I certainly wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be making fun of you at all. I mean, definitely stuff happens.
Well, I think it was on Wednesday when they had the Bill Self questions, and one of them was asking about where Bill Self was born. And I happen to know the answer. I actually shouted it out while I was listening at my desk, you know, that I have here at home where I was working at the time. Like, I was shouting it out because I knew the answer to it, but I can understand, like, that's not actually like a level two question, which is where they actually ask that, because I only happen to know it because of something I had read like two nights before. Because I was looking at something, I was potentially thinking about, you know, topics for certain things, and I happened to stumble across that, and I happened to remember it. But if I hadn't been looking at that, I would have absolutely no idea, you know. And so I definitely do think that all of the questions at a particular level are not the same, and so it is a little bit of a luck of the draw. So hopefully you come up with some really good questions that you really know the answers to, and we can have you going deep into the tournament. I will definitely be pubbing your performance as far as you can go. Mainly because I want someone that I know to actually do really well in this tournament. So, but I will get ready for it for next year. Hopefully, we can, you know, they'll do this again next year, because it was a lot of fun, even if it's, you know, it sucks that it has to replace the NCAA tournament for this year. But hopefully it's successful enough this year that they decide to go ahead and do it again next year, and we can all get in and kind of really enjoy ourselves at that point. So, all right, Fetch. So, now that we spent the first 10 minutes, which I thought we were only going to spend two or three, but we spent the first 10 minutes talking about trivia, there actually is some other news to have come out. You know, the only postseason award so far that's come out in this last week that went the way of the Jayhawks would have been Marcus Garrett. He won the Naismith Defensive Player of the Year. And then Yudoka Azubuike, he won the National Association of Basketball Coaches Defensive Player of the Year. If I have those, I believe I have those correct, but correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's correct.
So are you surprised by either of those? I think everybody kind of figured that Marcus Garrett was going to win at least one of the major Defensive Player of the Year awards. But were you surprised that the basketball coaches went with Yudoka Azubuike?
So it is kind of interesting that, you know, the basketball coaches went with them, and kind of my, and for the record, I, you know, no one's a bigger fan of Marcus Garrett's defense than I am. I mean, I think in all of the times I've watched KU play basketball, or all the years I've watched KU play basketball, rather, he's the best perimeter defender I think they've ever had. So certainly high praise for me about his defense, but it's interesting that the coaches picked Azubuike, because kind of the thing I've said all year is that he's the guy, both offensively and defensively, who you have to game plan around and who you have to keep track of at all times. He showed this year that not only is he a great deterrent at the rim, but he can also get out and cover guys on the perimeter, whether it be hedging ball screens or actually getting out and, you know, on a switch, covering late in the shot clock. And I think that stuff, as much as anything else, is why he's kind of turned himself into a late first round NBA draft type guy. But yeah, I think they both frankly deserve it, to be honest with you. I mean, they're definitely two insanely good defenders. I haven't seen certainly a pair of defenders better than them, but even individually, I don't know that I've seen one guy who's better than those two. And it just kind of, you know, obviously there's more important things in the world and more important things that have been taken away with this pandemic, but just kind of drives home how special this team was and what an opportunity they had. And you know, the fact that they were robbed of probably it's tough to say probably a national championship, but probably a national championship. And we were robbed of the opportunity to watch them. So two tremendous players.
I think that's fair, though, because, you know, they were the heavy favorite, betting favorite, to be able to win the national title. You know, they were clearly the overall number one seed. Like, it's hard to imagine anyone making a legitimate argument as to why they should not have been the heavy favorite. You know, they have probably three of the best, you know, seven defenders in the nation. When you look at, you know, the impact that Azubuike had, Marcus Garrett, and then Devon Dotson is a phenomenal defender as well. He just happened to be overshadowed, I think, by two defensive players on his own team that were better than him, and not by a whole lot. And so, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's interesting. And it's obviously not the ending that we wanted, but I do think it kind of speaks to something. You know, if they were going to split those Defensive Player of the Year awards, it would make sense they went that way, because I think the coaches are uniquely equipped to be able to really account for what Azubuike can do on the floor that doesn't show up in the counting stats. Whereas the national writers or the panels that make this up in terms of like the Wooden Award, the Naismith Award, things like that, you know, they are going to rely a whole lot more, I think, on counting stats and things like that. Marcus Garrett had a whole bunch of steals. He had a lot of things that show up in the box score as him, you know, making a big impact defensively. And when you're coming down the floor and watching defensively, you don't typically notice what goes on the defense inside very much, because you're naturally drawn towards the ball. Marcus Garrett was going to be on the ball a whole lot more often than Yudoka Azubuike. And so I just think you're naturally going to notice his defense, I think, a lot more, unless you know what you're looking for and you can see what Doak does. Because he was not, yes, he was a good shot blocker, but he was not a high volume shot blocker. And so, you know, they obviously avoided him in a lot of situations. And so he didn't get as much exposure in terms of being on the ball and making huge defensive plays. He was just extremely solid on his defensive positioning and things like that. So I'm not necessarily surprised. I really do think that if they were going to split them, that was the way it was going to go. I'm just happy to see Doak getting that recognition for his defense nationally. You know, and it really kind of, I mean, I noticed that the Defensive Player of the Year, Obi Toppin, has gotten three of those awards so far. Luka Garza got another one. The only two that haven't been out yet are probably the two most prestigious ones, in the Naismith and the Wooden Awards. The hope is that Doak can get one of those two at least. He's already a shoe-in, I think, with the Big 12 Player of the Year award to get his jersey retired. you know, and obviously a guy like Marcus Garrett will have another opportunity to get the kind of postseason awards, you know, in terms of individual player awards that he would need to get in order to be able to go up there as well. But your thoughts on National Player of the Year awards, do you think that Doak should be getting more recognition there? Do you think he's going to potentially win one of those other two? Or do you think that Obi Toppin actually deserves to be getting the majority of those?
Well, I think it's, you know, yes and no. I mean, I think as a rookie, for me, he's the best player in college basketball and was the best player in college basketball this year. I mean, he's a Defensive Player of the Year award winner and also set the record for highest field goal percentage in a career in college basketball history. And, you know, shot 75-ish percent from the field this year and is just such a force on both ends of the floor and occupies so much attention in terms of the scouting report and stuff like that. I mean, I think he would be my pick for National Player of the Year. But yeah, I mean, I think Obi Toppin is right there too. I think he's had a tremendous year. You know, I haven't watched a ton of Dayton games, but probably, you know, 5 to 10-ish just because they're really fun to watch play. And he's really fun too. You know, a lot of good highlights and stuff. I do think though that awarding him National Player of the Year and awarding, you know, especially Luka Garza National Player of the Year is just kind of an admission on most people's parts that they don't really look at defense, which, you know, I think offense at the end of the day is more important than defense. And obviously it's a little bit easier to evaluate offense than it is defense. But when you look at the whole package, I mean, both Toppin and Garza are kind of negatives on defense, and Azubuki is obviously a huge positive. So I think for that reason, I would definitely give him. My cat agrees, apparently. For those reasons, I would definitely give him my National Player of the Year award if I had a vote.
Yeah, the couple of things I will say, you know, I like to look at KenPom a lot, and I think the KenPom Player of the Year, while it's not the end all be all, I think it's a good kind of. Like, I think people that are in the top 5 or 6 of those are the legitimate candidates, or should be the legitimate candidates for National Player of the Year. Azubuike is number 6. Devon Dotson was number 2. Luka Garza was 1, and Obi Toppin was 4. So they all kind of fit into that, you know, kind of. Marcus Howard, I believe, was 3, and then Malachi Flynn from San Diego State was number 5. So, you know, they all kind of fit into that range of where I would think. And then there was some clear separation between those 6. And then Vernon Carey being the next guy from Duke. So, but, you know, Devon Dotson and Luka Garza, I think, were far and away, well, in that metric, were far and away the two best players in college basketball this year. And I can definitely see how, you know, defense might be a little underrated there. So you would give Azubuike a bump there and maybe ding Garza. But, you know, I also think that Devon Dotson should be getting serious consideration for National Player of the Year. With everything he brought to the table. And, you know, that might hurt both Azubuike and Dotson in the race for that Player of the Year title, just because it's two Kansas guys that are kind of fighting over the vote there. But, you know, I honestly think that it's one of those two. And it's hard for me to try to stay objective, but I think as objective as I can be, I do think that those are two of the best 3 or 4 players in the nation this year.
Yeah, well, and, you know, people always come back to the best player on the best team framework when talking about National Player of the Year and Heisman Trophy and stuff like that. And this year that would be Azubuike. But, yeah, I think you're right about Dotson, too. I mean, I think I'm – well, and everyone, I think, frankly, is pretty guilty of underrating him this year. He had a fantastic season, you know, led the Big 12 in scoring this year, which is something that I think has kind of slipped under the radar a little bit. Really, in any other year without the – insane performance by Azubuike all year, he would be getting talked about as, you know, Big 12 Player of the Year and potential National Player of the Year and stuff. So, yeah, he definitely deserves to get recognition. And I think, you know, maybe not on the same level, but Marcus Garrett does as well. You know, he had a really nice season offensively as well. You know, he actually led the Big 12 in assists per game. So, kind of a nice season for him on both ends of the floor as well. And I think, you know, looking at next year, he's going to have a real shot to be Big 12 Player of the Year next year.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is that those National Player of the Year awards typically come down to counting statistics. And defense is not real big for counting numbers, especially since we don't have nearly as good metrics that are set up to measure that defense. You know, and so like a guy like Garza is going to, because he averaged a lot more in terms of points per game, same with Obi Toppin, does not take into account just how deadly Azubuike was. And it's kind of funny because this was only his second best season in terms of overall 2-point percentage. He was 74.4% this year. His sophomore year, the other full year that he actually played, he was 77%, which is absolutely ridiculous to think about. But like you said, he ends up as the career leader in field goal percentage over the course of his entire career in college, which is an accomplishment that he'll be able to carry for quite a long time. Because honestly, I don't know how soon we're going to see another guy like him, especially as, more and more people, especially big men, are being pulled out to the perimeter to be able to play in the perimeter more. So, that's probably a mark that he's going to hold for quite a long time. But any other thoughts about National Player of the Year awards, defensive player, any of that stuff?
Yeah, no, I think we nailed it.
All right. So I have one more topic I want to talk about, but before we get into that one, because it's a pretty big one, a pretty ridiculous one too. I'm going to go and throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And we're back. All right, with that wonderful tease before the break, I think we would be remiss to not talk about this. It's kind of been blowing up the headlines the last couple of days here. Their details are being leaked from the depositions of the David Beatty lawsuit against the University of Kansas, with all kinds of allegations against Jeff Long, a bunch of details that kind of leaked out from those depositions. Of all of the information that's come out, what is the most surprising thing to you that's leaked out supposedly around, this entire lawsuit?
Well, the thing that actually stuck out to me first was they were talking about the violations of the non, whatever. I don't really know a ton about football rules here, but about the, non-field coaching staff or whatever, and about how the one guy put his hand up for an extra point. And they asked Jeff Long what the number one meant in the deposition, if that's what he was coaching. And he said something to the effect of, maybe he was just saying that KU's number one. And I thought that was really funny. I mean, that's the mark of, I think when he was getting prepared for that deposition, KU's lawyers probably were just like, yeah, just make something up or something, who cares?
You probably have a little bit more insight to how this stuff typically works. I've been through a deposition before, so I'm kind of somewhat familiar with it and kind of how easy it is to make up something that you look back on it and is nonsensical and kind of stupid, because I have done it before in an actual deposition that I've given. It's one of those things. Like, first of all, the situation that you were describing, it was, because it was essentially talking about how the big allegations against Beatty are obviously that he has a bunch of staff members that were providing coaching in situations where they're not allowed to. And Beatty's lawyers have pointed to multiple instances of practice tape, of game tape, where it appears that similar coaches in similar positions are not part of the, I don't remember the exact number, but I believe it's like 10 or 11 coaches that are allowed to give on-field instruction during practices and during games. Obviously all the rest of the analysts, they can talk to coaches. They can't help with tactical decisions, but they could talk about, hey, here's stats, or here, look at this video. They can bring stuff essentially and support the coaches, but they're not allowed to give on-field instruction. They're not allowed to be involved with actual tactical decision-making during the games. And what they pointed to was, again, I don't remember the actual names of the people involved, but after Kansas scored a touchdown, I believe this was in the game against Texas, if I'm not mistaken. It was the Boston College game. Okay. I knew it was one that they were being competitive in, and I knew it was also on the road. So, of those, those were the two chances. But so in this game, obviously, they score a touchdown, and I believe it was Les Miles, and then one of the guys behind him both put their finger up in the air for a one, which is the universal symbol for we're going for one, go for one. And like you said, like that was where the question was, like, he seemed to be giving instructions. Now, obviously it's easy to say, well, anybody who's involved with that is probably going to be doing something similar, even if they're not actually being looked to. You know, so there are easy defenses to it, but that was definitely a very humorous response, I think, that Jeff Long gave, because, you know, either he froze up or he just wasn't prepared for the question or whatever. There's some other weird allegations that come out of that. I think the thing that stuck out the most to me, you know, out of the Matt Beatty deposition, you know, there was a couple questionable comments that Jeff Long supposedly made. While we don't have the actual text of the deposition, it seems like those are the kind of things that you throw around without a lot of details. And the impression that I was given from the articles that I read was that there was not a lot of specific detail included in the deposition. It was more or less just kind of the hearsay stuff of, oh, well, I heard this about him saying this about some person, I'm not really sure who, like that kind of stuff that normally I wouldn't pay any attention to. It seems very clear that they are trying to use this this quote unquote information to really, you know, throw shade on what Jeff Long was doing, to really kind of set up this narrative, you know, that they were essentially looking for any reason to not be able to pay him money. And you know, I think we've had a discussion before about the actual merits of the lawsuit. I think we're both on record as saying, like, look, they should just pay him and get it over with and not deal with any of this stuff. But you know, do you have any other thoughts about the lawsuit, anything else to come out of it, or what we might, you know, expect to see, or how ugly this might actually get in the next few weeks here, or however long this actually takes?
Well, it sure seems like it's probably going to, you know, keep getting ugly. I assume at some point KU has offered to pay him some sort of money to get him to go away. And at this point, you know, they don't want to do it, which I wouldn't blame them the way things are going in terms of the court of public opinion, at least, in terms of, you know, the merits of the lawsuit. I think, I guess, you know, this is not my area of expertise, so I guess I'm not going to try to go there, but,
fair enough.
Probably the most damning thing, if it were true. And I mean, Matt Beatty is a, you know, absolute clown, so I wouldn't believe him if he told me the sun rose in the east. So, I'll take this with a grain of salt, but if he said, you know, all the stuff about Jeff Long, you know, some of the crass comments that he allegedly made about like female staffers and stuff like that, that would probably be, for my money anyway, the kind of the biggest bombshell to come out of this. But I don't, you know, I have a lot of problems with Jeff Long. I think he sucks as an athletic director and stuff, but I don't really get the, you know, sex pest creep vibe from him. So I think that that's probably just, you know, a disgruntled Matt Beatty trying to make stuff up and everything like that. And, but yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you're right in terms of our thoughts about the lawsuit overall, just, you know, pay the guy's money and get rid of it. And, is it really worth, you know, all this to save, you know, $3 million or whatever? You know, people have brought up the fact that, you know, KU has spent, I think it was like the second or third most, in terms of buyout money over the last 10 years or whatever it's been, only to, I think it was second only to Nebraska, if I remember correctly. But either way, I'm sure the boosters are getting a little tired of paying people not to coach. But I don't think that Les Miles is going to get fired anytime soon. I think he's either going to coach out his contract or, you know, retire and not have to get paid anymore. So I think that time's over for the time being anyway. But yeah, I think it just kind of, you know, points to an overall, just an overall picture of disorganization and kind of an athletic director, athletic department and athletic director who doesn't really know up from down, and things are not going great there. And I don't know about you, but, you know, if Bill Self takes another job or retires surprisingly or something like that, I don't trust the current people to hire a new basketball coach, which that's going to be the biggest hire that KU has made, you know, in the last 15 years. So they need to make sure their ducks are in a row before then. And the way this lawsuit's going doesn't really fill me with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts that I had about it. You know, Matt Beatty was a guy that actually, I think we've clowned on him a couple times for some of the statements that he had said while Shane Zinger was the athletic director. He definitely seemed to be a Zinger lackey, you know, a guy that would essentially say anything that Zinger needed him to, you know, and right before Zinger got fired, he made some very poignant statements about, you know, kind of that entire situation, that made me kind of think that if Zenger ended up leaving, he probably was not going to be, you know, much longer after that. Like, he was going to end up leaving pretty quick after that. He held on a whole lot longer than I thought he did. And I really do think that that's because Jeff Long came in with the idea of, look, we're not going to shake everything up without a good reason to do it. We're going to give everybody an opportunity to kind of reestablish their position. That was the one thing I think that Long did that, you know, with the exception of David Beatty, because I remember when Long got hired, like, the thought was, oh my gosh, we need to get rid of Beatty now. Like, yes, we're going to be horrible this season coming up, but let's take this opportunity to kind of clean house and get started and have absolutely no expectation for whoever comes in, you know. And like, that was the one position that I thought he should have moved quickly on that he didn't, but everything else, it made sense to like let everything settle. You're going into a football season. Camp has already started. Like, you kind of let everything settle, see where people can shake out, and give them an opportunity to save their job under what we assumed was going to be a competent administration. You know, yes, I have problems with the way Jeff Long has done something, but overall, he's definitely heads and tails above Shane Zenger and the way that Zenger ran things. And so, you know, it's a step up in the right direction. Like you said, I would have some very big concerns if he had replaced Bill Self at this point. But I also think that part of that is just because of kind of the situation that they're in right now. You know, this whole FBI, like, if they had replaced any of the coaches right now, or if anybody, no matter who was the athletic director, had to replace Bill Self at this point, I think it would be a very difficult, you know, a difficult task at this point anyway, just because of the specter of the FBI stuff. And obviously, you know, any major sanctions that Kansas gets extends Jeff Long's contract because of the way his contract has been set up. So, you know, there's kind of a lot of moving pieces there. That's honestly another topic we could get into entirely at a completely different time. But, you know, in terms of this lawsuit, like, I don't think any of the quote unquote allegations that have come out really should affect the kind of standing of this. It's just a bad PR hit. It's something that you don't want the public to hear about typically, but it shouldn't really, from my understanding of the law, shouldn't have any effect on, you know, the actual details of the case at this point. And so it seems like the main strategy here is just to dig up as much dirt on KU as you can, leak as much of it as you possibly can to the media to pressure Kansas into, you know, going ahead and settling at this point. I also wouldn't be surprised if David Beatty and his lawyers are essentially saying, look, it was $3 million before, it's more now because we've had to go through all of this. I've had to incur a whole bunch of costs to fight this fight with you. And, you know, you've made all of these inflammatory statements in the public. And so it's going to cost you more to settle now. And Kansas isn't willing to do that. So there's a lot of reasons, I think, why this could drag on. I also, though, think that, you know, it's completely plausible that they would have fired him the way that they said, fired him without cause, come back and found, you know, very serious things. And kind of depending on how, like, I'm not saying that I believe KU's lines here completely, but it's at least a plausible scenario for me why they think that they should be allowed to go ahead and withhold even a portion of the salary. And again, I'm not super well versed in this portion of the law, but, you know, I definitely, at least from my limited understanding, it seems a reasonable position for them to take. Ultimately, they may be proven wrong in court. They may end up settling and, you know, admitting in some fashion through a payment or whatever that maybe they were in the wrong a little bit. But ultimately, I think both sides are being reasonable. They both have a reasonable argument. It's a matter of, honestly, this should have been figured out between the two and saved everybody a whole bunch of time, saved everybody a whole bunch of money, and really kind of saved a bunch of this black eye that the university and even David Beatty is taking at this point.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, David.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think David Beatty, in terms of ever getting another, you know, Power 5 head coaching job, probably isn't going to happen. So if he can get an extra, you know, $3 million out of the deal, or, you know, probably, you know, less than that when you take attorney's fees and stuff into account, he's probably going to fight tooth and nail for that, because he's not like, you know, if Ed Orgeron got fired tomorrow, he could have basically any Power 5 job in the country that he wanted, making a ton of money. And those opportunities, I don't think, are ever going to happen again for David Beatty. So he kind of needs that money more so than your maybe average Power 5 football coach. So from that standpoint, I think it makes sense for him to fight for all that money, and make sense for him to not, you know, settle for less. So I think KU, frankly, probably should have realized that and seen that coming, and just, you know, again, paid the guy his freaking money already.
Right. They either should have just paid him the money, or they should have quietly settled this with him quite a while ago before all of this came out. So, but of course, we're not their lawyers. We don't get to tell them what to do. You know, we're obviously entitled to our opinions, but we'll see. I mean, at the very least, it's going to give us more content to talk about, because I'm sure there's going to be more stuff to come out of depositions, and kind of more things to kind of to take a look at there. So, all right. So before we get out of here for the day, any other topics you want to talk about? Any, you know, video games that you picked up recently, or are you still fighting your way through Breath of the Wild?
Yeah, no, I'm still hammering away on Zelda. I'm still stuck in the same spot that I am. Trying to go back and do like some other side stuff, and that's been going okay. But in terms of the main quest or whatever, I'm still stuck. So this, you know, I'm very bad at video games. So whenever I buy one, I get my money's worth, because it takes me forever to do one. So that's, I guess, one good thing. But yeah, that's pretty much all that's going on. We still are not closed. Like, we closed our office to the public, but we're still going in. Fortunately, we're a really small office, so it's not that big of a deal. But I've actually, one of my friends at work and I, she and her husband really like to play board games, like these really complicated, like way too nerdy for me board games, but I'm kind of learning just so I can have actual human beings to
just
talk to and go see.
Well,
yeah, exactly. Cause you know, I don't see anyone else, and they don't see anyone else. Because her husband is a teacher and works from home, and they don't go anywhere. And so it's not like I'm, you know, not like I'm exposing myself or them to extra people. So I figure like it's, somewhat safe, to go over there and, you know, not really quarantine, I guess, but quarantine over there sometimes and stuff. So, trying to get into it just again, yeah, like I said, to, just to see actual human beings and trying to learn how to be a little bit better of a board game player. And who knew board games could be so fun? I'm actually kind of getting into it. So maybe that's something I'll continue doing after this is all over.
Yeah, I'm a big board game guy myself as well. I don't typically have a lot of people to play with, because my family likes to play card games. So we'll play stuff like Uno, you know, and other similar ones like that. But I don't have a lot of board game people to play with. I used to play all the time with my family, but I now live halfway across the country from them, so I don't get that many opportunities. But yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot more stuff. We're gonna be looking for topics to explore later during the summer, so we'll have to kind of think of some of those. But we'll go ahead and leave it there for the night. Thank you so much for joining me, Fetch. For those of you guys that are out there listening, we are ramping up for an official season finale coming soon. I've already been talking with a few different people. What the season finale is going to be is a big compilation of, you know, best moments from the season, kind of general thoughts from the season, kind of just looking over the entire season. That's both football and basketball and any of the other sports that have occurred throughout this entire academic year. So what I need from you guys is you can either send to me on Twitter at RockChalkPod or by email at RockChalkPodcast@gmail.com. Your thoughts about the season, the times that you remember, you know, key plays or key games or things like that. I really want to take this opportunity to come up with an episode or, you know, two or maybe even three, depending on how many submissions we have, to go back and remember all of the best moments of the season and really just kind of remember the season as a whole, or the year as a whole, for all the great moments that there were, so that we can go ahead and really celebrate it and finish out the season, you know, with that way of kind of appreciating everything that has happened. We are going to transition into some off-season content. I do have some ideas already of what I'm going to be doing, but I do want to kind of put a proper end to the season here to do that. So please do go ahead and get that to me as soon as you possibly can. We're probably going to have that season finale here in the next couple weeks. I don't have an exact date. I'm still working out some of the details with some of the people that are coming on. But definitely want to look forward to that. Make sure you guys are paying attention here. Obviously, interact with me over on Twitter at RockChalkPod. You can interact with Fetch over on Twitter at RockChalkTalk as well. Definitely pay attention to RockChalk Sports Talk tomorrow to catch Fetch. Hopefully he makes it, you know, moves on so that next week we can be talking about his potential second round matchup there. So, but if you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. You can subscribe to us there. Give us a rating and review, 5 stars, nice comments. It'd be absolutely great if you could. If not, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys for your entertainment, to give you all the information that you could possibly need. But with that, we will leave it there. Fetch, thanks again for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.